peace, love, unity, and welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and in this week's hippy-dippy hoo-ha of a show, we will bring you the future face of popular music, LaRue. She's a synth star in the waiting, and yes, she's ginger. We'll have none other than the Don, the one and only Alexis Petridis, in the pod to discuss new music from Cat Power, Neon Neon and Grace Jones, brackets remixed. There'll be more face back than we can handle, and the feature with no name will tackle the music of Guided by Voices. But first, our main guest this week, here's a little bit of Metronomy. I heard she broke your heart again, so now you're gonna come and see me. We're back to the start again. When she gonna set me free? That's Heartbreaker by Metronomy, one of the standout tracks from their second album, Nights Out. Now, I'm joined here by Ms. Rosie Swash, who I know has been a fan of Joe Mount and his musical output for some time. Is that not true, Rosie?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Ever since I heard You Could Easily Have Me in 2006, I thought, this is out of this world. What is this? And everything he's done since, like, all the remixes he did for Roots Maneuver and the Klaxons and Architecture in Helsinki, there's something so uniquely skewed and beautiful about what he does that you can tell immediately that it's a remix from him. I just think Joseph Mount is fantastic.
So with all that knowledge and all that love locked in the Swash noggin, it seemed only appropriate that I should conduct the interview. Anyway, I did. And I began by asking him to sum up his year in five words.
Rewarding. Slightly tiring, that's two.
Okay.
Very enjoyable. That's five, isn't it?
That does seem to indicate or give away to anybody who's listening straight away that you've been kind of burning the musical candle at both ends this year. You've had your second album out, but you've also been doing an increasing amount of production work. What has actually taken up most of your time this year?
Mostly just playing live, really. I mean, I'm just enjoying the opportunities at the moment. I'm kind of filling my time.
But the live shows have always been quite central to what you do.
The first record didn't kind of... There were problems with the label, so the only way people could hear about us was really us just getting out and playing. And I guess we were lucky because because of what we do. It was slightly curious to people.
By what we do, do you mean the...
I can see you've got the word silly written on you.
Have I got the word silly? I think that's about the music rather than those crazy Iron Man style
lighting. Oh,
well,
that's better, isn't it?
But no, you've got a very unique homemade take on electrics.
Oh, yeah.
Do you take these lights and you put them on your chest and you can kind of slam them and they do interesting, different...
On and off is there two seconds.
Was that something you had to kind of sit down there and wire up yourself?
The background really of like the Metronomy stuff comes much more from when I spent a lot of time like at Electronica nights and it was all a bit kind of cerebral. And I kind of never really, from when we started doing the live show, I wasn't necessarily anticipating that it would have an audience whatsoever. And so yeah, we were about to do our first gig, and I was out in Brighton and was in a pound shop, and I saw these little cupboard lights, and so just kind of thought we could stick them on our chest and make it a live show, because otherwise we wouldn't have been doing much. She's gonna leave at 3. That's what her friend told me. Now I can't bear to check the time. Tonight she'll take my heart home with her, but I'm not ready to let it go now. Oh, how long have we got? I told you how long we got. All the time in the world. I just see it as like enjoying making music, I guess, and not trying to tone it down for the sake of a certain imagined listener or I don't know, something like that. I mean, and all the music that I kind of love is stuff that's got that to it.
Who would it be? Who would you be talking about then when you're talking about the music you like?
People like Frank Zappa and then even, I don't know, even people like Timbaland who take chances, and then Aphex Twin, people like that. I mean, like there's always people in every type of music that are doing it, and it's kind of, I think it's a nicer place to be than kind of just trying to stick to your guns and not really challenge yourself.
Does it ever come around full circle when you find yourself making some music and thinking, I'm not challenging myself enough here?
There's a song like Holiday that's on the album. Like, I did that and it was because the label wanted a single. And I was like, okay, let's pull it out of the bag. And I thought it sounded a bit standard. And then now, after giving it a bit of time, I realise it's kind of not that. You know, the label probably would have got behind it more if it sounded like
is it on the remix side of things that attracts you to a project?
One of the reasons I started doing them was partly just for money, like to keep, so I didn't have to work.
The wolf from the door.
Yeah, yeah. But then it's also quite nice to get other people's music to work with. And so I think at the beginning I was a lot less selective about what I'd do. And then if someone approaches you, and I, you know, wants you to have a go at remixes, it's just quite flattering, you know. Like, and so things like the Gorillaz one, like I was just like, oh wow, like I should do this. Initially, the thing that I enjoyed about it was like it was a nice way of people hearing about you and seeing what you kind of do. But now I'm kind of I'm not so excited about doing them.
Cause really?
Like, you know, you do it and then you give it away and. Your name is only ever attached to it as a, you know, a remix.
And I suppose that with the acts you're working with in terms of production, they are young and up and coming in the way that kind of you'd be familiar with from your own experience. Do you enjoy that opportunity to kind of help shape an artist's sound, say with the Cock and Bull Kids?
Yeah, well, I mean, the main thing is just meeting someone who you kind of, who like, I'd been waiting for ages to meet someone like Anita, like to find someone that was kind of young and exciting and had an amazing voice. And then she just kind of got in touch with me out of the blue and it was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Because until then I'd been trying to sing like a girl. and it is much more, I guess, enjoyable to help someone get going than to kind of try and get them back up.
Yeah, because in the last Guardian interview there was a kind of a bit of mentions of Stuart Price bouncing around the room. He's a guy who's kind of made a reputation for himself as somebody who can bring kind of like plastic figures back into the credible mainstream. Is that's not something that would ever appeal to you?
I keep saying like to Oscar that if ever Madonna was to get in touch, I would definitely say no.
Definitely. Not even if she arrived, kind of with
her
Guy Ritchie on a leash,
with him carrying sticks. A case,
yeah, him carrying a case full of pure gold.
No, I just think she's like, she should have a kind of graceful exit. I think from this pop malarkey. Why should she get the help when someone like Anita Cock and Bull Kids kind of, you know, just getting going and is potentially far more exciting than Madonna? But yeah, I mean, like, but then I also saw that you got Girls Aloud written on your sheet of paper.
Yeah, I was gonna pass over that. But you do say we mention Girls Aloud in every interview, just hoping that one of them will see it and then you will get some production work. So that in no way kind of contradicts or indeed compromises you.
Well, no, I'd say they're a different kettle of fish
because they're actually still pretty cool.
They're like a body that kind of
bodies. That's a good word.
But you know, like they're not like puppets. But they are this kind of amazing object, which is just like is like a vehicle for amazing pop music, and to kind of to use that vehicle, to take a ride on that vehicle.
If you were to put on a turban for a moment and contemplate a crystal ball, is it a turban they use? It probably is. What events would you predict happening in the world of music? In Joe Mount's world of music next year?
In my personal world of music?
Yeah, your personal world of music. Let your imagination fly free.
Well, yeah. Well, there's very practical predictions, such as a tour.
A tour? Great.
We're actually abroad. We're in Japan and Australia and kind of west coast of America in January.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know if I'd ever have necessarily gone to Australia if I wasn't in a band. I know that sounds horrible. But
yes, it does,
like,
but it's also true.
It's a long flight.
It is a long flight.
It's quite pricey.
And it's a cultural desert as well.
Well, you said it.
Yeah, I know.
And then, I've got to do the second or third record. I expect more of those five words that I gave you.
More fatigue.
more fatigue.
That was the lovely Joe Mount of Metronomy. Nights Out is available on Because Music, and the Mount-produced debut from the Cock and Bull Kid will be out next year. Right then, time for Singles Club. And if Rosie and I were in possession of trumpets right now, we would surely honk on them to commemorate the first appearance in this here pod of the Guardian's main man in music, Mr. Alexis Petridis. Hello, Alexis.
Hello.
Hello. It's great to have you with us. We're going to get right into the music. We're going to start with a tune you have brought with you today, and that's William's Blood by Grace Jones, the Aeroplane remix. Let me go. That was the Aeroplane remix of William's Blood by Grace Jones. Grace Jones is a musician, model and muse. She has released 10 solo albums, of which 2008's Heartless was her first in 19 years. Aeroplane are two remix specialists from Belgium. That'll never work. Their names are Stephen Fasano and Vito De Luca, and they're recording their own album next year. William's Blood, meanwhile, is the red stuff that keeps William's muscles working. Without it, he'd just be a bony sack, which is probably all the more reason to sing a song about it, Alexis, no?
Yes. What I like about that record is, I thought the Grace Jones album itself was a bit sort of underwhelming and a bit too concerned with trying to make a record that sounded like the sort of classic 1981 Grace Jones, sort of 1980, 81, 82, Compass Point kind of recordings, you know. It was sort of like a pastiche of her greater works. And what I like about the Aeroplane remix is that they've kept the song pretty intact, but they've taken it somewhere different that's simultaneously classic and modern. I really like this year, generally, a lot of what's, I suppose, bracketed as new disco or new Balearic productions. I think there's loads of really, really interesting music being made in that area by people like Prince Thomas and Lindstrom, all these sort of guys from, usually from sort of Nordic countries or whatever. A guy called Marquee, he's a really interesting producer as well. And that seemed to me an intriguing conjunction of that style of production with Miss Grace Jones.
Yeah, I have to say I agree with you 100%. And not just because I'm trying to smarm. I just thought the thing about the Aeroplane thing was, well, it stripped out all those elements from the original, and it is very similar. But the elements it did strip out, like the dramatic bass line that appears on the chorus, stripped that out and made it low key, but it made it sound much more dramatic and disco diva-ish in the process.
It also, we didn't get to it on there, but sort of, there's an enormous kind of build-up breakdown thing at the end that's incredibly effective. As you say, all those sort of melodramatic, slightly John Barry-ish strings and stuff like that aren't really on there, and yet it seems to convey a lot of drama. I'm not sure, being of enormously advanced years, I don't go to nightclubs with young people anymore, but I'm not quite sure how you dance to this kind of thing. It seems quite sort of slow motion, kind of gloopy music, but I gather it's tremendously popular with the young people.
Fortunately, so.
Rosie, we have a young person here. Yes,
I think this is fantastic. It brings the song, the drama of the original to life, and also it does what dance remixes often do, which is strips the elements of the songs and separates them, and so you can hear the choir, and that just sounds amazing, which you don't hear as much on the original. It's very good.
Initially, apparently, it was rejected by the record company. A lot of it appeared on blogs.
As a rejected remix.
It's now come out. And you do sort of wonder a bit who rejects that. Aeroplane stuff generally also, I will give a big thumbs up to them. There's a brilliant remix of Paris by Friendly Fires by them, which has Au Revoir Simone, a sort of New York duo, doing the vocals on it. And that's wicked. And their own stuff, I think they've just done one EP, I might be wrong, but that's pretty wicked too.
Well, that is the Aeroplane remix of William's Blood by Grace Jones, and it is, as Alexis said, out now. Next up on Singles Club is I've Been Loving You Too Long by Cat Power.
I
That was Cat Power with I've Been Loving You Too Long. As well as the name of a paramilitary group fighting for feline rights, Cat Power is the nom de plume of singer Chan Marshall. As well as recording her own music, Marshall has become famous for her cover versions, often stripped-down, intimate takes on rock and pop classics. Both an indie icon and an object of desire, it seems only fair to point out that Marshall also makes songs for car adverts and starred alongside Jude Law in Blueberry Nights, a truly terrible film. Rosie Swash,
yes.
Your choice.
Yes.
Explique news.
Well, I'm not saying that I fully endorse Cat Power's or her cover stuff, because I don't. I think Jukebox was pretty awful, which is her last big covers collection. But I read that this EP on which this song appears is going to be her last collection of cover songs. It's called Dark End of the Street after the James Carr song, which is obviously on the EP. She also does The Pogues, Fairport Convention, Creedence Clearwater Revival and Aretha Franklin. And it's good that it's her last one because it's the best covers that she's done, I think. I never really liked the Rolling Stone stuff with which she made her name. And she's kind of covered, I think, the American canon quite well. Bob Dylan, Rolling Stones, Velvet Underground have all been in there. And now she's got more or less wholly Motown and soul tracks on here, and it just brings out the absolute beauty of her voice. But it would be good to see her. I was probably one of the few people that liked The Greatest, her album, and it would be good to see her return into some original material after this.
I just wonder, what does this add to what we already knew?
I think what it does is sort of demonstrate that she's sort of capable of doing. I mean, this is quite difficult material to cover. I've Been Loving You Too Long is like, you know, this is a song with a pretty illustrious history of vocalists behind it, and she doesn't shame herself at all, which is not something you can say of many American indie female vocalists. You know, you wouldn't sort of want to hear necessarily their versions of classic Southern soul tracks. I have to say, I've listened to the EP. She seems a lot more comfortable with the soul stuff than the Fairport Convention track, which I thought she made an absolute pig's ear out. How you can stuff up Who Knows Where the Time Goes, which is one of the greatest songs ever written, you know, as I've Been Loving You Too Long. But it's absolutely bloody awful, her version of that.
I think she's best when she sticks to the Motown. So yeah, that's
why is that?
Because of her voice, I suppose, and her style of covering stuff, which, I mean, this sounds like a soul song, and that's often what she does when she covers it, or she just does it with the guitar, I suppose. But mainly for me, it's a reminder that she has got a really beautiful voice away from all the stuff that's been written about her, and the idea that she can only do covers. You think, well, actually, this is really good, I think.
If a little standard, maybe. Cat Power's latest collection of covers, Dark End of the Street, is out on December 12th on Matador Records. Our final track on this week's Singles Club is Dream Cars by Neon Neon. That's Neon Neon and Dream Cars. Neon Neon are Griff Rhys of Super Furry Animals and Boom Bip of Not An Awful Lot. Earlier this year, they released Stay in the Style, a concept album about the rise and fall of 80s car manufacturer John DeLorean. It was a critical success and came just 27 years too late to save DeLorean from bankruptcy. This is the fifth single on the album, and burnishing their hipster credentials further, they have also remixed the B-side on the latest Oasis single. This is My Choice. I kind of dismissed Neon Neon because I thought it was all a little bit whimsical. I saw them play South by Southwest and then heard the album, and I just thought it was all a bit nonchalant. It's grown on me, though, and this album, this track, is really powerful. That's what I like about it. It's pure stadium power. The bass is great. The percussion by Fab Moretti of The Strokes. The melody, it all adds up. It's like what Robert Palmer would be making if he were alive today.
Yes. I really like the Neon Neon album. I think it's interesting that you said that about them live, because I consistently, whatever Griff Rhys does, you know, you see him live. I saw him just before Candyline came out, which is his last solo album, which is also a really, really good record, you know, brilliant songs and stuff. And he was just faffing about on stage. And it was one of those things where you stood there watching it, thinking, oh, you know, I'm missing location, location, location to see this. You know, absolutely remarkable. And yet, in the studio, you know, I haven't seen Neon Neon live, but in the studio I think they really pulled it together, and I think it's a really interesting album that covers a lot of sort of different bases while never forfeiting its way with a sort of hooky pop melody and all that kind of thing. And I I'm surprised it hasn't sort of been a bigger thing than it actually is. I mean, it was Mercury nominated, but you know what I mean? It strikes me as deserving of certainly that record, which, as you say, is like a really commercial tune. Sort of Radio 1 play, you know, that kind of thing.
We're currently running through our albums of the year on Guardian/Music, and the winner is out on Friday. And Neon Neon got a couple of desultory votes, but it didn't get anywhere near the top 10, even amongst our critics, which I thought was surprising.
Maybe that is because of the live stuff, because when they were at Glastonbury, I just thought it was ridiculous how bad they were hit with Griff Rhys. I mean, it was obviously it must have been on purpose. Griff Rhys sat there and he had a big jumper on and sunglasses, and he just sat in a chair quite far back on the stage, and that's all he did. Mm. And it was just, and it's like, okay, great.
Do you think he thinks that is performance?
I think he's a peculiar man.
He smokes a lot of weed.
I mean, that's the thing. We're all sitting around here. We all love Griff Rhys, but, you know, there is something about...
I think this song, me and Alexis were listening to it before, and we discovered that it's got a similar hook to Under the Boardwalk in the chorus.
I was going to say that as well.
It's obviously not an original obsession.
But I didn't want to say it unless it made me sound really ignorant about pop music, but no.
That's how all pop music is.
Under the Boardwalk. Right, okay, well, that is Dream Cars by Neon Neon, and it's out on December the 12th. We want your reviews of this week's tracks from Neon Neon, from Aeroplane Remixing Grace Jones, and also from Cat Power. You can post them on our blog at guardian.co.uk/music/musicblog. You can hit us up on Facebook, and we will delve through them all and select the appropriate ones. There are also quite a few other tracks out to listen to next week. Here they are. Okay, well, that wraps it up for this week's Singles Club. We're going to have to move on, but I'm sure, Alexis, this has been a most pleasant experience for you and one you'll be anxious to repeat at the soonest possible juncture.
It has been, as Rosie promised it would be, the most exciting 45 minutes of my life. Imagine receiving an email from Rosie Swash that says, I hope you're ready for the most exciting 45 minutes of your life.
Well, thank you very much for coming and joining us today, Alexis. Right, next. That was the sound of La Rue, and ever-present in the lists of acts to look out for in 2009. She's a solo artiste who crafts confessional music that's accompanied not by acoustic guitar, but strident synthesizers. Tim Jones, it has to be said, has fallen head over heels for La Rue and has been penning short love poems to her in the office. So when he pleaded for the opportunity to interview her, we could only oblige. Here he is then, having the time of his life, and asking why La Rue made the change from folk singer to electro artiste.
It was just a natural, it wasn't like I'm going to be a folk singer. It was just what naturally happened because I'd grown up around a lot of folk music. But then, like most phases, you know, you have musical phases, I guess. I just kind of started to grow out of it, and I still love that music. I still think it's great, but I just started to be interested in other things. And I was very aware that I didn't want to be kind of stuck on a chair playing a guitar for my performing life. I thought, I don't want to be this artist, and I'm growing out of this music now, and I'm getting into this, you know, a lot of 80s music like Blancmange and Heaven 17 and Human League and stuff, and I kind of want to take it more there, and like getting into The Knife and stuff like that, and even like Chromeo, and I just thought, nah, I want to do this. And then I've kind of called Ben and we had a chat and he was like, I've just been having the exact same thought. And he's never really enjoyed recording acoustic music anyway. It's sort of, if you don't have like a really great sound booth or a really great room to do it in or really great mics, it just sounds shit. So yeah, that's my point really.
We should probably explain who Ben is and how you met.
He's the other half of LaRue in the studio. When we take it out live, obviously, the focus is kind of more on me as the kind of performer, but he's definitely the other half of the brain of LaRue. But I met him just that building over there.
That's in Brixton, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in Brixton, yeah. At a New Year's do, and I was playing the guitar, and someone just sort of noticed and started calling people and put me in touch with Ben, and we met, and it was musically love at first sight.
Now, I know when Evening Standard ran a piece saying that you were a big Kylie fan, that you wrote a blog saying that you weren't, but it's...
And then I deleted it.
You've now deleted it. Why did you delete it? Was it a kind of PR disaster on the horizon? Or?
Well, that's what I felt. I was like, hang on. A, I don't want to be seen to be hating on anyone because I don't think it's very classy. I'm not a fan of Kylie's music, but I don't have a problem with her or anything. No, it's not like I haven't met her and I hate her or anything. It was just a bit like, hey, you haven't really done your research. I've never said that, ever. And it was my first kind of piece of national press and they'd got something really wrong. It was not angry, oh my God, I hate Kylie kind of way. But that's why I realised you can't get across your humour and your personality on the internet, on the blog. So I just took it down and I don't want to be seen to be being involved in all that, like, just generally slagging people off and gossip and blogs. And so yeah, I just think it should be about the music, not about what I do every day.
No,
I'm just not really interested.
Well, going back to the music, one thing I really like about it is how sometimes it can seem very fragile, but you're also quite defiant as well. Like a song like Bulletproof is quite defiant.
It's a real conscious thing when we're writing. I think one of the main things that me and Ben always want is the dark and light. So if you have the melodies, you know, the kind of happy, upbeat melodies and the lyrics that aren't necessarily written in jest or, like, they're not happy necessarily when I write them. But, I don't know, it's that whole kind of, like, when it's two things, two kind of emotions in one song, it's, you get that kind of yearning quality, that kind of aching quality, and I think that's always really... really important in a pop song.
I mean, it's almost quite difficult to make electronic music sound so emotional, and I read that you'd cried between vocal takes. Is that true?
Yeah. Ben always makes me really, really, really get in touch with what I'm singing, and it's just so important to have that emotion for us. I just think what's the point of empty pop music? Like, what is the point? Tiger Lily, I think, is an interesting contrast. It's a little bit darker. There is a reference to Thriller, the Vincent Price bit in Thriller, where we've got a whole epic like mid lane.
Who's doing the vocals on that bit?
My dad.
Really?
Oh wow.
Because he's an actor and he just took the part on like really, really well, and it sounds really like Vincent Price. It's great.
Right, I've just got one more question before I go. What's wrong with your hair?
What's wrong with my hair? So many things. It's got a disease. It didn't happen on purpose, this hair.
Right.
It's totally happened by mistake. I used to have hair down to my stomach until like Christmas. And then I just started cutting it all off because I couldn't be bothered to go and get a haircut. And it just always used to just make my hair look really boring. So I just let it go, and it just started to die at the ends, literally die. And so I was like, oh, I can't bother to go to hairdressers. So I started chopping it off myself, and then I just chopped it off and chopped it off and chopped more off and chopped more off until there was like none left. And then I just had this like weird fringe thing going on, and then I started to like put wax in it, and then before you know it, it's just like this.
It's totally organic.
Totally organic, yeah.
That was LaRue, and her single Quicksand is out on December the 15th. You'll also be able to catch her on tour in January, including some dates with Lily Allen. It's the feature with no name now, but everyone knows it's game. That's the dust off forgotten acts and sing their many praises. This week, Michael Hann is up to bat, and he wants to tell you all about Guided by Voices.
Rarely has a group got more things wrong than Guided by Voices. Most of their albums are patchy, at best. In fact, we can take this further. The majority of the Guided by Voices repertoire is rubbish. And that's a lot of rubbish, given that leader Robert Pollard once claimed, with only a little exaggeration, that by the time he wound up the GBV name, they had more than 8,000 songs to choose from. But, of course there's a but, Guided by Voices might just be the best rock band of the past 20 years. Noel Gallagher could die forgiven if he wrote a song half as good as Motor Away, or Little Lines, or My Valuable Hunting Knife, or I Am a Scientist, or Game of Pricks, or Hot Freaks. Because the thing about writing 8,000 songs is that even if only a quarter of them are good, then that's still an awful lot of good songs. Change the opening line of the Goodfellas voiceover and you know everything you need about Pollard. As far back as he could remember, he wanted to be a rock star. He was designing his album covers before he even had a band. When he got a band, he recorded 4 albums before thinking to pass some of those albums on to people outside his immediate circle. Hence the fact that it took several years for GBV to pass from regional obscurity in Ohio to national and then international obscurity. Pollard's gift lay in combining the willfully obscure with the gleefully populist. He loved the scrawled, absurdist musical sketches that pepper his albums as much as he loved the huge rock songs enthralled to his heroes, The Who. This, after all, was a man who once accepted a gig in Philadelphia because the promoter offered as payment a rare krautrock LP Pollard had been seeking for years. He loved language, too. Even when his lyrics were arrant nonsense, which was much of the time, the use and delivery of words was a marvel. He brought sense to the stream of surrealism he spouted, but very occasionally he would descend into literalism, with sometimes startling results. When you motor away, beyond the watch for lips. One of GBV's notional hits was a song called Motor Away. It is, as car songs usually are, about escape. But Pollard was old enough to know that the promises made in and by youth are illusory. He was enthralled to them, but not blinded by them. And so, a single line from Motor Away contains everything that a million young bands don't understand about the world. That line, when you motor away down the icy streets, you can lie to yourself that it's the chance of a lifetime. The Drive-By Truckers sing that rock and roll means well, but it can't help telling young boys lies. Robert Pollard, through the vicissitudes of his career, through his determination to pursue his own path, and through that single line, told the truth. And that's one important thing to get right.
As the King of Squonk, Michael Hann, and you can find Guided by Voices in all good retailers, both online and off. Over to you now, and a big sticky wodge of Faceback. First, some new Facebook friends, Rishi Bob Hindocha, Fergus Elphinstone, Nick Heath, Neil Gaines, Villa Monteferrante, Rachel Bisdy and Tom Howard. On the blog, meanwhile, there was lots. There was about, I think, well, in my opinion, perhaps the best music podcast blog thread ever. There was lots of love for Robert Wyatt on the blog, and specifically Rosie's interview with him. I will read the comments to it so as to spare Rosie's blushes. Steve L said, thank you. What a great interview with Mr. Wyatt. So great that someone is doing something right on this bleak old box of tricks. And then 3 X's, which signify kisses. Kebabette said, I only knew of Robert Wyatt from shipbuilding, and he came across well, warm, smart, thoughtful, and a brilliant laugh. Soul wrote, what a frank and honest interviewee Robert Wyatt is. In an industry in which musicians are either self-censored or censored by their wider circle, it's refreshing to see someone tell it as it is. "'Twas a great interview, but I'm now singing shipbuilding "'whilst walking round like some kind of musical scurrilous gossip monger. "'It's just a rumour that was spread about town.'"
Also, there's big ups in the direction of Emmy the Great slagging off of the presets, queries as to whether this podcast might be presented by Camilla Ginge. Sadly, she's on holiday. And tales of accidents at ice skating.
Yes, Camilla Maginge being my drag alter ego. Less said about that, the better, though. You can find it on the website. There was also a long and heated debate about the merits of this year's X Factor, the highlight of which was Portishead's in no way rambling... We love you, Portishead. In no way rambling list of questions posed by the show. Is it always so awful?
What's with that dope with the earrings?
Why does everyone love Ashley's wife?
Has Louis come out?
Is he bullied because of it?
Should he have a facelift?
Why did Diana turn crap?
Why didn't she do Sinead O'Connor?
JLS, what a load of old shit. Question mark not required. Good work there, Portishead. And remember, you can post your thoughts on this week's show at guardian.co.uk/music/musicblog. I'm afraid that is it for this week's show, though. We'll be back next Friday with a special interview with Bon Iver, one of our artists of the year. Laura Barton's flown all the way to New York to meet him. Until then, though, that is it. I'd like to say thank you very much to Rosie Swash.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Alexis Petridis for coming in. I'm Paul McInnes. Speak to you soon.